Welcome to the Tournament Poker Edge podcast, brought to you by TournamentPokerEdge.com, the only podcast dedicated exclusively to poker tournament strategy. Now here's your host, Clayton Fletcher.
Hello once again, everybody, and welcome to the Tournament Poker Edge podcast. I'm your host, Clayton Fletcher, in fabulous Las Vegas, joined today on the call by the legendary owner, founder, and overall grand poobah head honcho at TPE. You know him, you love him, Derek Killingbird Tenbush. Derek, how you been, buddy?
I've been good, Clayton. How are you?
Really good. How's the stream going? I know you've been streaming on Twitch these days. How's that going?
Yeah, it's been good. Haven't had as much time. I've been traveling a ton and just lots going on with the distillery and stuff. So at this point, I'm lucky if I can get in a stream or two a week. But still running the Tuesday night home game every night, so that's always fun.
Cool.
And it's been a lot of fun.
Yeah. Well, I've been begging you to take some time out of your obviously very busy schedule to join me on the podcast because about 2 or 3 weeks ago, an email went out to all TPE members, and that email has resulted in just a flood of my inbox from TPE members and others wanting to know what is going on with my favorite poker training website.
Yeah, I'm actually I'm really happy that they're all DMing you and not me, because it's been very quiet on my side, and that's good because I don't have time to reply. No, in all seriousness, so obviously we've been doing TP for nearly 15 years now, and in that time, I mean, we were kind of old when we started TP as far as poker, you know, the general poker player community goes, and now we're really old. But it's, you know, it's been a decade and a half, and we a lot of us have just kind of moved on to other things. Some of the guys don't play a lot of poker anymore. You know, Mark's really involved with DFS and NFTs and sports betting and so on and so forth. Diego's running a company up in New York. I have this distillery that I'm running. And so everybody's kind of got all these things going on. And we started to realize, you know, we don't really have the time to give TP the full attention that we'd like to or that it deserves. But at the same time, like, you know, I actually just typed a little message in the forums to answer a few people's questions. And I was saying, like, TP is my baby, and it's, you know, it's Diego's baby. We started this together a long time ago, and when we started it, you know, we told each other, hey, if we could just break even financially, that'll be cool, because then we'll have, like, this fun community hangout in, and we won't lose money doing it. We didn't know we were going to make money, and we certainly didn't know it was going to be as profitable as it was or that it would last this long. So we kind of kept going back and forth. We're like, well, you know, neither of us have a lot of time to work on it, but we don't want to shut it down because we absolutely love it. So we, you know, we were like, well, what do we do? What are the, you know, what are the options? So we just kind of finally decided, you know what, let's just cease making new video content for the time being, and we'll leave the site up. We'll let it, you know, it's still a full functioning website with over 3,000 tournament training videos on it. And we'll just kind of see where the future takes us. We certainly have not ruled out bringing back new content in the future, or even just sort of sporadic, you know, new content. I don't know, if Andrew Brokos wins a bracelet or something, maybe he wants to do a review of some hands from it or something like that. So we could certainly see doing stuff like that. And I'm also very happy that we're going to continue doing the podcast because, you know, everyone obviously loves that, and you've done an amazing job with it. So, you know, it's not, you know, I've had people hit me up and like, hey, I heard you're shutting down TP. Well, we're not shutting down TP. TP still exists, still rolling. There's tons of content. You know, if you signed up today, it would take you probably 10 years to go through all the content.
Yeah.
So there's a lot there to digest. But this is just kind of our way of giving ourselves, I don't want to say a break, but giving ourselves a chance to breathe for a minute. And kind of focus on the things that we need to be focusing on in these other ventures we have going on, but still giving ourselves this kind of creative outlet with TP to chat with the community, to do fun things, and who knows, maybe someday when Diego and I have more time, we ramp it right back up again.
Okay, so a few questions, and thanks for kind of filling us in on where you guys are at with everything, because obviously TPE Nation, everyone's on edge right now, you know, like they don't want it to go away. They think the podcast is going away, the website's going away, and the world's about to end. My first question, probably the most important question I'll ask, is why is it that in your hypothetical example, it's Andrew who wins a bracelet and not me?
Well, that's a very good question. I just assume that you two are going to get heads up, and then nice. And then you're going to let him win. Because, you know, you guys are old buddies, and that's what friends do for each other.
Of course, I would just, you know, right this way, Andrew, walk this way to your to your bracelet. Just so you know, by the way, as offended as I am, I have a much better chance of winning a bracelet this year than Andrew does, because he's not here.
Is he not even playing the main event?
I don't know. Maybe he'll play the main event, but he's not here now. And I don't know what his plans are, but when I asked him, he told me that he was fully planning to be a slacker. all right, so here's another question. Have you guys given thought to, I'm sure you have, but how does the process work? What about hiring someone to run the website for you, since you guys are both too busy with other things, et cetera? Like, what about, you know, reaching out and maybe finding someone to operate the website so that it doesn't have to be stagnant?
Yeah, that's certainly something we've kind of considered, and probably something we'll look into down the road. And certainly, if there's anybody listening who ever wanted to run a poker training site, drop me a DM on Twitter or an email. I think we've always, and to our detriment sometimes, we've always had this like protective sort of stance on TPE. We've always run it completely ourselves with just some very small, like we've actually used, like a long time ago, we used Carlos Welch to help out with some stuff on the back end and stuff like that. I mean, you know how long it took me to give up the podcast reins, so you can imagine how long it would take me to give up the entire website reins. But yeah, it's certainly something we're open to, and we, you know, Diego and I talk about stuff like this at, like, every other day. You know, we'll be on Skype just messaging each other back and forth, like, hey, maybe we should think about doing this, or maybe we should think about doing that. So that's why I kind of describe this as a breather more than anything else. It's just a chance for us to sort of reset, figure out what the future looks like, and then kind of move forward.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. I mean, it just, for a lot of us, it's a sentimental thing. You know, like, we would listen to Poker Road Radio back, you know, 15 years ago, and they used to do like regular commercial breaks on Poker Road Radio. It was more like a radio station type of podcast. Yeah. And one of them was Casey Jarzabek saying, hey, MTTers, are you looking for a website to learn how to sharpen your tournament poker game? And, I heard of Tournament Poker Edge way back then in the early days of podcasting. So, obviously, it means so much to so many of us that we don't want to see it go away, and we certainly don't want to see it be at a standstill or on a break or anything like that. But at the same time, it is your baby and Diego's baby. So if you guys have made that decision, I guess that all of us in the community are just going to have to accept it. In the meantime, I do have intentions of keeping the podcast going. And, as I mentioned on the episode, I think 2 or 3 weeks ago, we're actively seeking sponsors for this podcast. So if anyone's interested in that, you should hit me up. We have a large community of mostly men, mostly in their 30s and 40s, who are interested in poker and mostly live in the United States, although we do have listeners all around the world. But if that's a demographic that you would like to target for your product or service, we are looking for sponsors. And so maybe the future of the podcast will be similar to what it is now, but just I have to read some ads and stuff, which I'm more than happy to do, you know, to keep it going.
Yeah, anything to keep it going, for sure. And that, like you said, it is a very sentimental thing. And, I mean, to me, too, for sure. Like, I've met so many amazing people through TPE that I certainly would have never met if it weren't for TPE. I mean, I actually I believe we've had somewhere around 14 or 15,000 members over that 15-year period. Obviously, some have come and gone, and some are still here. And but I've met hundreds and hundreds of people, you know, at the World Series or just at other poker events, or even, I mean, the guy who is my real estate agent. He was a TP member before I ever knew him. So, you know, it's like I can't really imagine what my life would have looked like without TP, and that's kind of why we have taken this approach of like, well, we can't let it end. So let's figure out what we can do, you know?
Yeah, I mean, look, you guys have your hands on other projects now. So to me, it sounds like maybe the solution is someone that you trust that can kind of handle the day-to-day of the website so that it doesn't have to, you know, remain stagnant or whatever. But like you say, there's already 3,000 videos on there. It would take you forever to watch everything and to catch up with everything that's on there. You guys know my favorite coach. I make no secret about the fact that I'm a Andrew Brokus fanboy. And, you know, I watch every video that he's ever made. You can actually go back and watch many of them again and again and get something different out of it every time, because the man just packs so much training into one 30 to 40 minute video. There's no way your brain can absorb it all just by watching it one time. So,
absolutely.
Yeah, that's my thing. So, yeah, if anyone out there feels like he or she may be a solution to one of these problems that we've mentioned here early on this episode, feel free to get in touch with Derek or me. I'm on Twitter at Clayton Comic. And Derek, what is your Twitter, just so they have it?
It's at Derek Tenbush.
All right. TENBUSCH. All right, cool. So enough about that. The sky is not falling, is what I hear you saying. The sky
exactly,
is not falling, but the clouds are a little grayer than they used to be. Is that fair to say?
Yeah. All right. That's fair to say, yeah. And I'll still be, you know, I'll still be doing my Twitch stream and hopefully jumping on the podcast periodically. So if people have any like questions that, you know, they don't feel like typing out it or they'd like to get a more personal answer to, I mean, just swing by the Twitch stream. That's probably the easiest way to find me. Come by on any random Tuesday night and I'll be happy to answer any questions or take any feedback that people have.
I've actually done that myself, where I left Derek I left Derek a few messages and then I would say, oh yeah, I know where he is right now, so let me just go on Twitch real quick.
Yeah, and I've already had a few people jump in the chat and ask, you know, hey, what's going on? So
yeah,
that's a pretty sure way to get me.
Yeah, well, your email that you sent out to all the members kind of incited a bit of a mini panic mode. So I hope I hope this conversation clarifies some of that for people. Now, let's move on to other topics. Derek, do you have plans to come? We spoke a couple months ago and you said maybe for the Monster Stack. Are you still thinking about coming to Vegas, or is the distillery world just too hectic right now?
Yeah, it's tough. In fact, speaking of Ron Fez buddy Diego, we were actually just Skyping back and forth before this call, and he was like, hey, I'm kind of thinking about going out this week. You know, can you make it? Not this week, but like a certain week. And it's just, I mean, I just got back from Los Angeles yesterday. I think it was yesterday, 2 days ago. I leave for a conference the middle of this month, and then I have a trip to Michigan, or sorry, to Mississippi at the end of the month, and then a trip to Michigan in July. And I'm just having a terrible time trying to find a space to go. And I'm definitely having a little FOMO sitting here in North Carolina and reading tweets from everybody about their chip stacks and stuff. Although there's not as many as usual. So I need all you listeners to start tweeting your chip stacks, because I need updates. I know some people hate chip count updates. I love them. So tag me if you have to.
I want chip count updates, said no one ever, except for Derek.
Level one, even. I'm good with level one updates. Bring them on. So I'm still trying to find an opportunity. I told Diego, look, it's probably going to be a situation where I just wake up one morning and I look at the calendar and I'm like, oh, this week's not too crazy. And then I'll just check flight prices and I'll fly out. There's a chance that I just go and don't even play poker, which I know sounds really weird. But I would just go out and essentially to see people. You know, we have so many friends, obviously, out there. Plus, I needed that opportunity to do a live in-person podcast with you. So I got to find an excuse and a time frame to get out there.
Yeah, the one we did last year in the fall is basically legendary at this point. So we have to do something similar to that, if at all possible. Yeah. So, yeah, I hope you can find time in your busy schedule for little old me and the little old World Series of Poker. I know that making the alcoholic beverages is a top priority right now, but why don't you come and drink some with us instead?
Yeah, I got to keep the customers happy. But sure. I'm hoping to find a window of opportunity for sure.
Yeah, well, I'm sure you'll keep everybody updated about all of that. Yeah, so what's been going on with the home game? So tell people about that, because you're on ACR. You usually have a few drinks while playing low to medium stakes poker tournaments, right?
Yeah. Yeah. At this point, it's more of a social stream than a poker stream. I mean, we obviously play poker the entire time, and there's a lot of poker talk, but it's mostly an opportunity to sort of reconnect with, you know, TPE members, fans of the stream, fans of the podcast, and just have a little bit of fun. And yeah, so I stream on America's Card Room. They've been incredibly generous in giving me my own private game, which is it's just a $3.30 buy-in. But it with re-entries, usually last 3 or 4 hours. It's an absolute blast. We put a bunch of bounties on. We do giveaways. It's super fun. So, yeah, so I've been doing that. And then, like you said, we're super busy with the distillery and the brewery and with traveling. You know, now that COVID has, knock on wood, sort of kind of lifted, can actually get out and travel again. So trying to make up for a little lost time and go back and see some family in Michigan and see some friends in LA this week. It's this is my wedding anniversary was last week, and then my birthday's coming up. So we kind of made this trip to LA sort of a combination anniversary birthday celebration. So it was a super good time.
Well, that's great, man. A lot of cause for celebration in Derek world. So that's cool.
Yeah,
absolutely. So, yeah, why don't you just figure out your schedule and then tweet out, let everybody know when you're going to be out here. And for you to come out and not play any poker, that wouldn't be the first time, would it? That's happened before.
I don't think I've ever come out and not played poker, but I've definitely come out and played way less poker than I had planned.
Okay, all right, fair enough.
I think there was one year when Mark and I and a few other buddies went out and we got a house together for maybe, it was only probably like 3 weeks, and I bet I played 3 tournaments in that 3 week period.
Wow. Wow.
But we spent a lot of quality time in the pool and a lot of quality time at the craps table. So it was good.
Quality time at the craps table. There you go. There you go. I think the pool is a higher EV than the craps table.
Yeah, for sure.
So
and what is the vibe like out there? That's what I'm kind of curious about. Like, you know, is it busy? Like, what's the whole situation with, like, how crowded is it? How bad is the parking?
Yeah, it's totally different than in years past. Obviously, it's the first time the World Series of Poker has ever been on the Strip. I arrived here on Saturday as we record this on Wednesday afternoon. So I've been here for, you know, just a few days now. Right away, I was really taken aback by how beautiful the ballroom is at the Paris Casino, where most of your day ones would take place. It is a gigantic room. There are hundreds and hundreds of poker tables, and they're not placed very closely together. They also seem a little bigger than the tables that they used in years past, but they could be the exact same tables, and I'm just, you know, being fooled by the dimensions of the room or whatever.
Right.
It's nice to feel like, even when we were 10-handed the other day, I played in the housewarming. I almost called it the homecoming, close enough. The housewarming, which, you know, they made us do 10-handed because I played the final flight, which got over 5,000 entries. So, wow. I mean, that's, yeah, insane. So, yeah, we had to squeeze 10 per table, but it wasn't horrible. I mean, look, 10-handed is always the nut low. It's never good. But I feel like at the Rio, 10-handed felt more crowded than it did here. I don't know if the tables are actually bigger. Maybe the chairs are a little smaller. or maybe the players were smaller. I don't know. Something was different. Something was different in KB. I don't know exactly what it was. But yeah, the room is not terribly cold. That was a big surprise because I've never been inside a casino in June when it wasn't just freezing cold. So yeah. I actually didn't need my sweatshirt at all on that first day. This, after last week's episode, I advised everyone to pack a sweatshirt. And then when they moved, then the other space is in Bally's Convention Center. And you guys know how much I love Bally's Las Vegas, my favorite hotel in the world. Of course, I'm joking because I was burglarized there once not long ago. Yeah, so that place, the room there was like sweltering hot. Like we were actually sweating, dealers fanning themselves. It was not a pretty picture. So for those who complained every single summer about how cold the Rio was, believe me, given the choice between too cold and too hot, you want it too cold. At least you could put on a sweatshirt. What am I supposed to do if it's 90 degrees in the room? I'm supposed to take off my clothes? So right. That was rough. But yeah, apparently one of the air conditioning units was broken or something. So I'm not sure about whether they've gotten that fixed. But I'm obviously many, many players were complaining about the heat. I saw they put two gigantic fans in there one day to try to help with that. But yeah, I really like the Paris Ballroom. It seems like a very perfect location. It's right in the middle of the strip. It's pretty seamless where you walk in, you can register for tournaments. You can go to this other room if you already did like the pre-registration and just have to show your ID or whatever. Players seem really happy, excited, like they always do at the beginning of the World Series. But it's nice to be able to see all the smiling faces because there's no mask mandate this year. There's no vaccine mandate. There's nothing COVID related other than take personal responsibility for your own health. So, yeah, that's pretty cool. It felt a little bit, I don't know. I don't want to say it was oppressive last year because they did what they had to do in order to get the thing off the ground. But sure. Yeah, just, you know, sort of silly. Like I can sit here and play poker all day with no mask on, but as soon as it's time for a break, I have to put my mask on. Yeah, it's kind of like the restaurants in New York where they're like, if you're seated at your table, you could take your mask off, but if you get up to use the bathroom, you have to put your mask on. It's like, okay. Right. It's like, yeah, like the virus knows whether or not I'm sitting at my table eating and wouldn't be rude enough to like attack my body while I'm eating, right? So
yeah,
I don't know. I mean, they do their best. I mean, I don't envy public health officials, but it's nice to kind of have that in basically the rear view mirror at this point. I'm sure there'll be some type of outbreak. I'm sure that somebody will get sick. People get sick every single year in the World Series of Poker. We've had a flu outbreak. We had Legionnaires' disease the one year at the Rio, which was pretty unforgettable. So, yeah, there will be some kind of bug going around. But I guess, you know, given the state of vaccination, I saw in the news that almost 80% of U.S. citizens have been vaccinated by now. So I guess that's just, it means that if you do happen to contract the virus, you are unlikely to die from it. So, okay, we'll take it,
yeah,
you know.
Actually, I actually saw on Twitter today that Phil Hellmuth caught it. So he's taking some time away from the tables, which you can imagine he's really excited about.
Yeah, sure. Yeah, I mean, Phil Hellmuth, he cares about nothing more than bracelets. All he wants are all the bracelets. So for him to have to miss a few events. But you know what? Good for him for being responsible and taking the time away to not infect the entire poker community. You know, if I catch something or if I feel sick one day, whether I take a COVID test or not, I'm not going to show up at the Paris or Bally's to play in the World Series of Poker because there are literally hundreds and maybe thousands of people, depending on what day it is, that could get them sick. It's just not worth it, you know. Take a few days off, 100%. You know, do the right thing and take care of each other. So, yeah, but you know, people seem in high spirits. The poker community never is happy about anything, but everybody seems happy about Paris. So
nice. That's good to hear.
Some things we don't like. There aren't enough bathrooms. Parking is kind of a nightmare. Luckily for me, I don't have a car, so I'm not in that world. The entrance in and out of the main WSOP area is pretty small, especially compared with the Rio. So there's always a bottleneck, like on any like that the housewarming. Mm-hmm. We have 5,000 players. you know, all trying to squeeze through this little space. So there is some, you know, foot traffic problems. But all in all, just being able to feel like I'm not, like, right up against another table. Like, if you move your chair back 2 inches, you're not going to bang into another chair behind you like you would at the Rio. And, yeah, it's just – it's good vibes. They don't have a lot of TVs around. So for those who like to watch sporting events while you're playing World Series events, you might want to just make sure your phone is charged so that you can watch those games or whatever on your phones. They haven't done that part yet. I imagine that will come soon. But, yeah, so far there aren't any gigantic TVs all over the place. I mean, there are one or two, but not like with the setup that we used to have in the old pavilion room or what have you. But, yeah, I mean, the satellites are running. The tournaments are doing great. They're breaking all kinds of records. All the numbers are way up from last year and even the year before that. So it feels like everyone's excited to be on the Strip and, you know, playing live poker the way nature intended.
See, now you describing it is giving me the itch. It's making me want to go. So I have to find a date. I'll find something.
Yeah, I mean, you really don't want to miss this. It's just, there's really nothing like it. You know, just the next table over, there's a French guy, and he took a bad beat, and there's like three French journalists writing down the details of his bad beat, while this French woman, like, she looks like a caricature of a French woman. She literally had a beret on. I'm not making this up. She's wearing a beret and taking pictures of him while he's describing his bad beat in French to three journalists. Like, you just won't find that in any other tournament. Just everybody hanging on every single outcome of every single hand. I don't know. It's just very, very exciting. I don't have any good results yet. I did last all day on Sunday in my housewarming flight. I busted about 100 places from the money. You actually reach the money on day one. It's one of those.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, so I almost got into the money, but as our listeners will not be surprised to hear, I was not overly concerned with making min cashing a $500 buy-in tournament. I was trying to abuse those who wanted to be able to say that they cashed in a World Series of Poker event, and so I was trying to abuse the perceived bubble and just ran into a bunch of hands and ended up busting myself. So, yeah, that does happen. If you're a bubble abuser, sometimes you're the one who ends up getting abused. And so that's kind of what happened to me on Sunday after about 11 and a half hours of play. So, but yeah, good times. I was just happy to be there. And, you know, even the dealers don't have to wear masks. It's just, it feels like we're back. You know, it's really great.
Awesome.
Also played the Six Max yesterday, $1,500 Six Max. Really good times. I mean, for the first hour or so, my table was actually four-handed, which is, you know, right up my alley. You know, just I like playing shorthanded. I like getting involved. I like mixing it up. I like putting pressure on. So it's like you're always in late position. I love it. You know, I love four-handed. So, yeah, and that one, I did well in that one. I lasted a while. I have some hands, a hand or two that we can discuss from that one if you have time, Derek.
Yeah, let's do it.
All right, so yeah, let me pull this one up. So yeah, this one is so it's a $1,500 six max bracelet event, and let's see, here's a hand from the 200-400 level. There's a $400 chip, I should say, big blind ante as well. So there's 1,000 in the middle, and we have about 40,000 in our stack, which is up from the 25K starting stack. So let's see. They fold to us on the button. We've got the King of Spades, Six of Spades. So King, Six, suited. And I made it 1,100. So my raise sizing in these situations when I'm trying to steal the blinds is a little bit bigger than typical. Like, the average raise at this table was probably 900. Some players were doing 1,000. I hadn't seen anyone do 1,100 yet. It's almost 3x. The reason why I go this big, it's exploitative. I think a lot of players don't adjust their calling ranges for a larger bet compared with a smaller bet or a min raise. So I'm actually targeting the big blind. I expect him to call too wide here, even though he's not getting that great of a price. So I'm going to build a pot in position, and he's going to be playing he's going to be calling a little too much. That's at least the theory behind it. What do you think?
Yeah, I agree. I actually found in this new era of the big blind ante is that the big blind tends to call too often and too wide because they feel so much more committed, even though the math doesn't really work that way. So yeah, I like sizing up a little bit there.
Yeah, cool. I mean, yeah, the 400 he already put in the middle for the ante is gone. That's not his anymore. So
right,
you're right.
Yeah. And I think people look at it, they see it, and they're like, well, that's mine, and that's mine. So
yeah,
I
have to defend all those chips. I don't want to leave them out there to die. Yeah, and so yeah. I see that kind of mistake a lot too. Now, to be clear, I don't have much of a hand myself. I mean, King 6 isn't exactly a monster, but I feel like in position, a suited king in position against a wide calling range, I should have a pretty good advantage overall on most flops in this situation. So I'd rather play a bigger pot when I have the advantage. And since they're not folding enough anyway, we might as well make that call a bigger mistake. So that's the idea here. So, yeah, we make it 1,100. And the small blind, who I actually was not targeting, but she's worth describing for you guys. She's probably taller than I am. She's a really tall, very thin, older woman. She's probably in her mid to late 50s. She's got a very California look. She's got an expensive looking handbag. She has hair extensions. She has pumped up lips, you know, like the California duck lips that you see. Her boobs are similarly, I guess, repurposed. Previously owned. I don't know what you want to say. I would say she's a stylish older woman. You know, she's taking care of herself, and she wants everybody to see that she's taking care of herself. But yeah, she's got that kind of California plasticky look to her, that she's been doing a lot of maintenance on herself. She hasn't been at our table that long, but she's been pretty tight since she has sat down. But she's only got about 20,000 in her stack. Remember, we start the tournament with 25. The big blind, the guy that I was targeting, has been a mostly cautious, you know, not overly bluffy player. He looks a bit like Brandon Adams. And also in his demeanor, he kind of reminds me of Brandon Adams. For those who don't know, Brandon Adams, a very successful high-stakes poker player. I believe he's got a bracelet or two. He's also a professor at Harvard University, so he's got sort of this air about him that he's just erudite and thoughtful and sensitive and that kind of thing. So this guy has a very similar vibe. Like, he's wearing a nice collared shirt. His hair is coiffed. You know what I mean? He doesn't look like he just rolled out of bed and, like, just, you know, shoved a breakfast burrito down his throat and rolled into the tournament area. This guy looks like, you know, he took a shower this morning, that sort of thing.
Yeah.
Which that in itself kind of makes him stand out as a player, right? Anyway, both of these players call my raise. So we're going to see a flop three-handed in position with the King 6 of spades. And by the way, the Brandon Adams guy, the big blind, he has us covered by a lot. He's got about 60,000. So he's been tight and thoughtful, and he's been picking off a few bluffs. People keep bluffing him, and he keeps having it. So it's good to be him. So anyway, the flop comes, Jack of spades, six of hearts, four of spades. So Jack 6-4 with two spades, and we have the King 6 of spades. So it's a great flop for us. We've got middle pair and the King high flush draw plus an overcard. So they both check to me. There's 3,700 in the middle. What do you want to do, Derek?
I'm probably going to bet around... You said there's 3,700 in the middle?
Yes, sir.
Yeah, so I think I'm going to bet here. I mean, we kind of want some action, I think. So I don't think we want to go super small. Probably like 1,700.
Wow. Maybe even first time ever.
I nailed it?
You nailed exactly what I did.
Yes.
So if you nailed it, I nailed it too, because we did the same thing. I bet 1,700. I don't know. 17 just felt right. You know, you were about to say maybe a little smaller or maybe a little bigger.
I was going to say maybe you could go just a tad smaller. But that was the number I would have bet.
Yeah, I feel like we're trying to get action from worse sixes, possibly a hand like ace four, or any four really would be great. You know, of course, we're always going to get action from hands that can beat us, but when we're trying to get value, those are the hands we can get value from, as well as flush draws, and we hope that this guy has a flush draw, right? Because yep. It's probably not as good as ours. So, and we have a pair, so we're beating any flush draw right now. So let's see. The small blind folds, and the big blind calls. And he looked like he was considering something else before he decided to call. So it wasn't just like a quick check, I bet, she folds, he calls. It was more like a check, check, I bet, she folds quickly, and he's thoughtful for, I don't know, 15, 20 seconds. Now, I couldn't tell whether he was considering folding or considering raising, but he eventually did call. So, okay. The turn is the 8 of clubs. So the board is now jack of spades, 6 of hearts, 4 of spades, 8 of clubs. So the 5-7 got there, right?
Yep.
Otherwise, nothing really changed. And he checks again. What do you want to do?
I mean, I think we continue to bet. I think there's a lot of... I mean, he can have things like ace-4, random 6, you know, 5-6 suited, things like that, that we can probably just get him off now. I mean, we don't really... you know, even though we don't improve our hand, I don't really dislike this turn. I mean, I guess he can have, like, jack-8 or something, but... I think I'd go ahead and bet again. I might size this one down a little. I guess there's, what, about 7K in the middle?
Yeah, so let's see. Yeah, 34 plus 37. Yeah, 71.
So, yeah, I might just go, like, 2,800, 2,500, something like that.
Okay. I like it. And you're still trying to get value from worse hands.
Yeah, I think so. And we might also fold out some better hands too, which I guess is a fine result as well. You know, something like ace-6.
Yeah.
And we block that. But I mean, I don't think he's ever folding a jack. But this, I think also by betting here, it gives us the opportunity to make a wiser decision on whatever the river ends up being. Because typically the way these hands are going to go is if he calls here, he's going to check the river. So it just kind of allows us more options, I think, with our river move. You know, we can just check back, and if our 6 is good or if we improve our hand, we can bet, or we can bluff if we want to go that route. Well, I don't know if we're really bluffing, but you get the idea. So
yeah, well, it's interesting because we have a hand that I think benefits from folds and from calls. Mm-hmm. I guess the 2,500 that you want to do is nice because it can probably achieve both outcomes. I guess for me, I think I made a sizing mistake here. I think the best play here, maybe not the best play, but a good play, is to bet big on the turn. You know, it puts a lot more pressure on him when he has a hand like pocket sevens or 8-7, right? He might have peeled on the flop with 8-7, especially if he had a spade in his hand, and now he has a pair of eights and a gut shot, right? Now, a lot of the sixes, a lot of the fours, a lot of the eights that he has in his range now have a gut shot along with it, right? And so I think sizing up to possibly get action from some of those hands, it makes it, again, a bigger mistake when he calls, but it's also okay with me if he folds because those hands have, you know, some kind of equity. Even though, you know, they can't win with a spade, but they have other outs, right? We just have a pair of sixes, right? Really, we have a lot more potential than that, but at the moment we just have what is now third pair in this spot.
Yeah.
So
I think you make a good point. I mean, as you said, and I think you're right, we kind of benefit from calls and folds, so by going bigger we increase the value of our benefit, and we put more pressure on him to fold what might be a better hand.
Yeah, it's fine with me if he folds, because even if he'll occasionally fold a better hand if we bet big enough, right? Like, it's really hard to call with like pocket sevens or 6-5 if we bet like the pot or close to it. Yeah, okay, well, 6-5 doesn't... We have that hand beat at the moment, right? So let's say 8-7. That's, like, kind of the hand that I'm targeting. Or what if he has ace six? Wouldn't that be brutal? Like, we end up losing this pot, we get outkicked with our pair of six. That would just be, I want to get rid of those hands. I mean, there aren't that many of them, but it's worth considering. It even starts to put pressure on a jack if I bet really big on the turn, especially if I shove.
Right. And I was going to say one thing that's probably worth considering too is that when we make the bet on the turn bigger, it means that if our plan is to bluff, like, I keep saying bluff, but I don't know if that's right. If our plan is to bet river on, like, some blanks, like a deuce of hearts or something, we're going to have to probably bet, we're going to have to bet bigger because now the pot's bigger. You can tell me if you think differently. I'm probably shutting down. If we pot this or three-quarter pot it and he calls here, I'm probably just going to try to find showdown on the river and hope that our six is good. But you are a blaster, so you might have a different plan.
Yeah, no, I mean, I think if nothing gets there on the river, like, say, like the four pairs or something, some innocuous card comes down on the end, I don't think I can bet again. So if I go big on the turn, I probably have a lot of give ups on the river, because like you're saying, you polarize yourself when you make a bigger bet. So I'm no longer representing like a pair of sixes when I bet.
Right.
Say there's 71 in there. Say I bet it's like 6,500 on the turn. Like, really size up, or maybe even go a little bigger. Maybe even like bet 8,500. Right. So you're over betting the pot on the turn. Like, when you do that, you're not representing a six anymore. You're representing a hand that can actually beat a jack at that point, and is trying to get value from a jack, because you're never getting called. If you overbet this pot on the turn, you're never getting called by like a four anymore, right? You lose all the value bets that you would have had. So I'm basically turning my hand into a bluff, which is okay because I have that spade draw, which is why I thought this was an interesting hand to discuss. So I really like kind of betting big on the turn, and if you get called, mostly giving up on the river, but you still have outs. If the river comes a king, a six, or a spade, then I'm going to blast again and hope to get action.
Yeah, good point. And now we've built the pot up bigger, so we can actually get more of a, get more value on the river.
Yeah, and being in position, we have the option to do that or not, right? So
yeah, I like that.
Yeah. So I did something in between. I bet 4,400. So what is that? Like 55% of the pot, 60% of the pot, something like that. So
yeah.
I don't really like my sizing here on the turn, but it's basically the same purpose as the larger bet that I now wish I had made. But I think that larger bet just has a lot more success because it's more clear what I'm trying to say.
Right.
Makes sense. That's the bet I would have made if I had flopped a set of sixes. Right. We're trying to represent a big hand with a big bet. Now, this is kind of a middle-ish bet. A slightly more than half pot bet is not really very clear what you're trying to do. The smaller bet is like, I'm trying to get value from marginal hands. A larger bet is I'm trying to get value from top pair or better.
Mm-hmm.
Right, that's what you're representing with either of those sizing. With that middle bet, you're just kind of like, I don't know, I'm just betting half the pot because I don't know what else to do. And so I'm not happy with my play in this hand. I don't like that I bet 4,400. My opponent called, so let's talk about what we'll do on a blank river. Now, having bet half the pot on the turn, are we still mostly going to give up on a blank river, or do we now have more incentive to bluff on the end because we didn't polarize ourselves enough on 4th Street? What do you think?
Yeah, I mean, I think the fact that we did go smaller, or not smaller than we both sound like we think we could have. I mean, I think we can bet a bunch of blanks. I mean, he can still call here with a lot of his, like, 4x, 6x. He's probably going to call a flush draw. I mean, again, we obviously have the flush draw as well, but he can certainly have one.
He could have one, yeah.
I mean, I guess there's probably some that I might, like a 7 or a 5, like those I might bail on. But, if this comes a complete blank, or maybe, I'm trying to think of what I would do on like an Ace River, because that seems like a pretty good card to bomb.
Yeah, I mean, we obviously have a lot more aces in our range than he does in his. So yeah. Ace River, like we could easily have had a hand like Ace Jack, and then we bomb that river. You know, he's this is exactly how we play Ace Jack. So
yeah, I'm probably just gonna shut down on like the obvious bad cards for us.
Okay.
Like anything that puts a four card straight on the board, for example.
Right. Yeah, now bear in mind, like when he does have bottom pair, middle pair, or even third pair, he's got, I mean, whether he's got an eight or a six or a four, he's mostly going to have a straight draw with it. And so I do think he'll call a lot with all of those because of that. You know, he's got a lot of cards that he can improve with. So that's why I wish I had sized up a little bit to make that mistake a bigger mistake, or at least to price him out of doing so when he's got like some sort of gut shot in a pair. Yeah. So, yeah, I don't feel like he can make too many mistakes with those hands when I bet 44 into 71 here, which is why I don't like it.
Agreed.
I mean, while you're playing poker, you want to try to induce mistakes from your opponent. You want to give your opponent difficult decisions. So if he's got a hand like 5-4 and I just bet half the pot here on the turn, I think it's a pretty easy call for him. Right?
Yeah, I would agree.
But if I bet bigger, then it's like, well, I hate to fold because I've got a pair. It could be good. My 4 could be good. Clayton could be bluffing. I do have a gut shot to fall back on. But at the same time, he's betting 6,500 into 7,100. You know, I want to put them in a vice, you know. It's like you want to put your opponent's heads in a vice. You don't want to say, here you go, nice, easy bet for you to call if you want to.
Yeah. Especially when you're the button opening, because nobody ever gives the button credit.
Yeah, right. A button's allowed to have a hand, too.
Yeah. So he's like, oh, you know, I mean, this guy could be calling with ace queen for all we know.
Yeah, right. Absolutely. So the river comes the nine of clubs. It's jack 6-4-8-9, and my spades missed. So what would you do if he checks here?
Why can't we just get there like everyone else does?
I know. I just want to, you know, I had so many outs, I missed them all.
Yeah. So if he ends up checking, I don't, this is kind of one of those cards where I'm like, I don't hate this card. But I don't know, man. People float so much these days, like 9-10 kind of hands. But I kind of, I don't know. I feel like this is enough of a brick that maybe we would want to barrel again if he checks. Okay. It's as close to a brick as we can get.
Yeah.
Without being a total brick, I guess.
Yeah. All right, so there's about 16,000 in the middle. How much would you bet if he checks the river?
So, psychologically, I kind of want to make it five figures because people think of, I mean, it's like buying a car or whatever, right? Like, 11K seems like so much more than 9,800, even though it's not that much more.
Yeah.
So I kind of want to get over that 10K mark, maybe like 10.5 or 11 or something.
All right.
I mean, now I think we really truly are turning our hand into a bluff, but I just think there's so many things that he can probably fold here.
Yeah, and you don't.
I still don't think we get a jack to fold, but I think we fold out just about everything else.
Yeah,
you know, that's not a set or a straight or whatever.
Well, if he folds a jack for 10-5, then he's pretty exploitable. Like if he doesn't, if he can't call with a jack, what can he call with? He needs at least two pair, right? Or he needs a better kicker with his jack. Like yeah, he's got to call you down with the jack. He doesn't have to like it, especially when you do size up like that on the river. And some people will fold top pair just because, you know, it's unlikely that you're bluffing or that, you know, you're turning a pair of sixes into a bluff. It's pretty creative play. I think it's got a lot of merits. Yeah. We'll never know, Derek, because our opponent donk leads the river for 12,000.
Wow. I was actually just going to say that if I'm him and I had flopped a set or a monster hand, I kind of like leading big here. because you've shown a lot of strength. You've represented a big hand. I didn't think he was going to do that, but I was thinking in my head that I would do that if I were him. And I kind of don't think it's ever a bluff either from him.
Yeah, I mean, check call lead is not a line that you usually see from a bluffer.
It's definitely not like a fishy line. That's like a... as you said, thoughtful. That's a thoughtful line.
Yeah, I think he had a plan all along. My question becomes if he could possibly have queen 10, because queen 10 got there, 10-7 got mm-hmm. there. A lot of straights have come in now, but at the same time, that's all balanced by the fact that there are so many flush draws that missed, and we're beating all of them. So would he do mm-hmm. this with a flush draw? You know, now what if he's sitting there with, like, I don't know, say the 10 high flush draw, and he can't do anything, right? He can't win. He's got a bluff.
Yeah.
Would he bet that much? Would he bet 12,000? I mean, it's a great play. If it's a bluff, it's a great bluff. If it's a value bet, I think it's a pretty darn good value bet, because I'm sitting here trying to decide whether I should call with a pair of sixes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Oof. There's some players who I think if you had a really good read, or you knew the person and their play style, I think there are some people that would do that with a missed flush draw. And I don't know enough about this guy to know if he's one of them, but I think in a vacuum, it's not going to be a missed flush draw very often.
Yeah.
I think I'm folding. In fact, I'm almost certain I'm folding.
Yeah.
But
it's not a fun spot to be in. I mean, the whole point of building this pot from the first place was that I would be in position with a range advantage, right? And all these good things going for me. Then we flop so beautifully. We flop a not only a flush draw, but a pair to go with it. And I feel like I'm in control of this pot all the way down. And then we get to the end, and all of a sudden he's in the driver's seat, and I'm the one with my head in the vice. So, yeah, I did end up folding, but it wasn't easy, because I did feel like it's a good line for him to take if he has a flush draw and he misses, especially because all those straights got there. The problem for him is he doesn't know whether I actually have a strong hand. As you mentioned, Derek, I've been representing a pretty strong hand from the beginning here. So how can he be so sure that he's not just going to be punting 12,000 right there? So,
yeah.
I mean, we're never sure in poker. That's the beauty of the game, you know, incomplete information and all. But, yeah, I thought this was a really interesting spot. And, you know, I bust out the voice recorder right away, and I was like, I want to remember the details of this one, because this is the problem when you're playing with a guy that's capable of a lot of different things, is he might be doing one of those things that he's capable of doing right now. But, I mean, I'm just not heroic enough to put in another 12,000 into this pot with just a pair of sixes. I missed, so I fold.
Yeah. Yeah, and even if he's, you know, he could be turning hands into a bluff, even though they're a better hand than yours. You know what I mean?
Give me one.
Like ace nine of spades, ace eight of spades, things like that. Like, I don't think it's going to do it with just like a random, you know, I don't know, 3-6 suited or something. But I think he could do it with those kind of hands.
Yeah, I'm not sure though. It seems like he's more polarized when he makes this big bet. To have like a middle pair or second pair kind of hand, maybe you're right, but yeah, I don't expect him to show up with that very often. I feel like it's going to be a straight or a set or a missed flush.
Queen 10 of spades makes all the sense in the world.
Queen 10 of spades got there, yeah.
Like, that's the one where if I call there, that's what he shows.
Yeah, he'll be like, oh, no big deal. I just rivered the nuts.
Yeah. Just a little runner straight. Thank you.
Yeah. Well, this one got my juices flowing, and I started thinking about, you know, especially 4th Street, like how I wish I'd made a bigger bet. I wonder how the hand changes if I do. And, you know, obviously a lot of questions like, what if he doesn't lead the river? Should we bet? And I kind of settled on, when I first saw the nine of clubs, I decided I wasn't going to barrel again. I don't know. It just, it felt like a bad card.
Yeah.
He could have two pair. Like, there's a lot. There's just a, it's a little too connected with all the other cards that are out there. So I was ready to give up on this one, but then he didn't let me. I was going to try to show down my six and see if it was any good, but no, I didn't get the opportunity. Yeah.
Bastards.
Yeah. Interesting
that's
spot.
That's a cool hand, though. That's yeah. Interesting.
Yeah. And, you know, six max, a lot of spots like that come up because you just, you have to play a lot more hands. So I love shorthanded tournaments. I'm hoping to jump into the shootout. I cashed in the shootout last year. The $1,500 shootout is coming up. I think it's tomorrow.
Nice.
Yeah, I'm hoping I can jump into that one because it's fun because after an hour or two, it's a little more shorthanded. So you get that leg room action. You get to play more hands. And I don't know. I like the action. And I have a ton of bounty events on my schedule. So I'm looking forward to all the mystery bounty, the million bounty, the super bounty that they're doing at the Venetian. Any kind of bounty. If you got a bounty, I'll be there. Hall of Fame bounty. You name it, I'll be there. You put the word bounty in the title, I'll be there. I bought bounty paper towels because I'm so excited.
That's amazing. Well, hopefully they'll be the one there the week that I manage to get out.
Yeah, yeah. Be sure to let us know when that is. I know you have to go, but what else do you want to tell people before we say goodbye?
I just want to say thank you to everyone for the amazing support for all these years, and you know, the responses and feedback that I have gotten from people has been really positive and encouraging. So as long as you guys keep hanging around and listening to the podcast and stuff, we'll keep putting it out.
Yeah, and follow Derek on Twitter at Derek Tenbush, and of course on Twitch at Killing Bird on Twitch. So Derek, thanks so much for taking the time. I appreciate it. I know how busy you are. I appreciate you coming on.
Thank you, Clayton. Always a pleasure.
So for Derek Killingberg, Tenbush, and all the lovely people here at Tournament Poker Edge, I'm Clayton Fletcher. Thank you so much for listening. I wanna-